Rick Ganley, this is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire is gearing up for a major component of the Affordable Care Act, called health exchanges. These are often described as marketplaces where individuals and small businesses can shop around for health insurance, sort of like searching online for a rental car or a flight. Under the act, each state is supposed to have an exchange set up by 2014, and about 20 states are well on their way. But in New Hampshire and many other places, political opposition to the Affordable Care Act and hopes that President Romney would repeal it caused some delay. Now, though, the Granite State and others need to get moving on creating these exchanges, and there is lots of activity on this right now in New Hampshire. A task force is preparing its recommendations for lawmakers and Governor Hassan. Then they need to sign off on a plan by February 15th. Then it goes to the feds and then back to the state, where the commissioners of insurance and health and human services need to start implementation. But when all these inside the process have had their say, what will these exchanges mean for the average Granite Stater? That's what we're looking at today in our program, and we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about how these health exchanges are supposed to operate and whether they'll help you or your business obtain better health coverage? From what you've heard, do you have some concerns about this concept of health exchanges? Or do they sound like a good idea? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. We have four guests for the hour with us in studio. Lisa Girton, co-chair of New Hampshire's Health Exchange Advisory Board. Lisa is also president and general manager of Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield in New Hampshire. And Lisa Girton, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Also with us, Ray White, president of Cornerstone Benefits and Retirement Group, which provides health insurance for small businesses. He's also a member of that Health Exchange Advisory Board and a former Republican state senator from Bedford. And Ray White, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Good to see you.
Also with us, Lisa Kaplan Howe, policy director for New Hampshire Voices for Health, a nonprofit consumer advocacy organization. Lisa Kaplan Howe is also a member of the Health Exchange Advisory Board. And Lisa, welcome. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Todd Bookman, health reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. And Todd, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Laura.
And Todd, I want to start with you. Give us your best layperson definition of what a health exchange is.
So exchanges are online marketplaces where individuals, small businesses will now shop for insurance. In New Hampshire, we're talking about roughly 200,000 people that will get their insurance through these new exchanges. At the heart of the exchange is this website, this online shopping site. You can think of it like a Travelocity or an Orbitz. Buying health insurance, of course, though, is quite complicated. Some would say more complicated than buying a plane ticket to Miami. But what you'll do at the heart is really enter in some details, and then a list of plans will pop up, ideally with all the plans competing right there in front of you on the screen. It'll help the shopper make a more informed choice about the plan that will work best for them. And ideally, it'll help stabilize health prices because you have everybody competing with each other in one central location.
And you said 200,000 Granite Staters may be eligible to shop on these exchanges. That's a lot of people.
That is. That includes all the individuals. That also includes all the people that are part of small businesses that will now shop on these exchanges.
So sort of answering this question, but I want to ask you anyway, Todd, overall, how important are the establishment of these exchanges to the big goals of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think whether or not the Affordable Care Act will actually make health care affordable, what it certainly will do is increase access. 30 million new Americans will now have access to health insurance. The mandate is what really accomplishes that goal, this new penalty that people will have to pay if they don't carry health insurance. Exchanges are really just the new way that insurance will get bought and sold in America. And the idea is that if you streamline the process, if you lay things out simply for people, more people will shop, more people will buy the right plans, and potentially costs will drop because of competition.
I want to ask you too, Lisa Girton, how important do you think these exchanges are in the overall scope of the Affordable Care Act? How big a deal is this?
Well, I think it is one of the major components, one of the major changes that the Act brings, you know, to health insurance. And I think we see them as a delivery channel or a part of the delivery system, probably in no way, shape, or form a full replacement of how insurance is bought today. but another option for people. And it is the place you have to go if you're receiving a subsidy. So someone who is now receiving a subsidy under the Affordable Care Act has to buy through the exchange in order to get the benefit of that subsidy. So I think that's very clearly the population that will be using the exchanges right away. And we do think it's very important.
Well, and that is a question I had. I mean, who can shop on these exchanges, Lisa, and who can't?
Well, I think we can think about that in two categories. First of all, individuals. And as I said, someone who is getting a subsidy to help with the purchase of insurance as an individual does need to shop through the exchange in order to get the benefit of that subsidy. Even if you're not getting a subsidy, this exchange will be an option for you. So if you're a consumer in the individual market today purchasing your insurance, you can evaluate what's on the exchange and decide if that's a way that you want to buy or if you want to continue to purchase your insurance outside of the exchange. For groups, I would say at this point it's a little less clear because we know the Act creates something called shop exchanges, which are intended to be, again, a distribution channel for groups to purchase insurance. And they may, but I think at this point a lot more attention has been paid to, frankly, the individual piece of this than the shop. And so I think we all have some questions about exactly how that will work and how widely it will be used.
And Ray White, has anybody done this before, set up these shop around comparisons, these, you know, Travelocity-like websites for health insurance? Are there any models that we can look to for this?
There are definitely web-based shopping portals in existence now, and I guess we could call those private exchanges to use the terminology. So I think some of that has been worked through in the private commercial market. However, I think what the federal government envisions is a standardization of how information is presented and so forth, because there is Unfortunately, Commissioner Sebelius has some suspicions about people like me who deliver health care through the private market and don't think that she feels we're really trustworthy. And so their vision is that they'll create a independent, non-biased presentation of the various options with the assumption, I guess, that we're not independent and we are biased. And so that's where I think they're going to move in that direction.
Okay, so I'm hearing a little resentment from you here about how the feds are putting this into action.
Well, I know in my practice, quite frankly, I get paid roughly the same commission from every carrier, so I really don't have a financial dog in the fight with who a person picks, but there are those that just don't believe that you push a Harvard Pilgrim or you push MVP or you push Anthem or whatever carrier you want to name, Celtic, whatever company it is, that you have a bias toward that company. And that's just not the case because, like I say, commissions are virtually standardized throughout the industry. And my goal is always just to link up the consumer to the product. I get paid when I make the sale, so I don't care who you're with as long as you're happy.
Right. Well, and Lisa Kaplan Howe, I want to bring you into this. As the voice of the patient, of the healthcare consumer, how important is this exchange for New Hampshire in terms of those big twin goals that everybody talks about, widening access, reducing cost?
It's really important to consumers and a real potential benefit, both because for the first time you will be able to go to one place and learn not just about private insurance, but also public programs.
Like Medicaid.
Exactly, that you or a family member may be eligible for. And think about a family where a parent may not be eligible for a public program, but a child may. And to have one place where they as a family can go and not have to move around to different places to access those coverage is incredibly important. But I think what Lisa Girton said is right, is that it's an option. It's not going to be the only option. And the way I think about it really is trying to create another avenue that may be more comfortable for some people or more accessible for some people for accessing coverage. A lot of people do go to producers and I think will continue to go to producers, but a lot of people may have other ways that it would be easier for them to access coverage. And just quickly going back to the shop exchange that Lisa mentioned, I think there are two potential real benefits there. One is that just like individuals, there are a number of small businesses that will be be eligible and are eligible currently for tax credits. And once the exchange is up and running, that will be how they access those tax credits. But also, this is an opportunity for small businesses, many for the first time, to be able to offer their employees choice of a range of plans, rather than most small businesses today don't have that opportunity, certainly to offer for more than one carrier. But to be able to say to your employee, here's what I'm able to contribute toward your coverage, and I'm going to put you at this level of coverage, and we could get more into the details, but you can choose any plan within that level of coverage, which I think is both a benefit to the employers, taking some pressure off them and having to choose one plan for their entire workforce, but certainly a benefit for employees who for the first time will be able to choose what plan is best for them.
And lots more questions for all of you, but I also want to invite our listeners to join us. The number here in the exchange for you to join us with your questions or comments about the new health exchanges that are coming under the Affordable Care Act is 1-800-892-6477, or send us a short email at exchange@nhpr.org. And first up is Mike in Hanover. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi. So I just wanted to say, I think this certainly all of this, the exchanges will increase accessibility, but I really have a tough time thinking that they'll do anything for the costs overall. Because, I mean, the way I see it with private insurers and the public insurers to a degree, too, I mean, there's a great deal of transparency in what everyone's charging, and the exchanges will actually make it much more clear. I mean, they'll all be able to see their prices. And then as long as there are relatively few insurers in the market, they can all get a fairly big share of the pie, and then there's really not much of an incentive to compete on price. It's almost like the cell phone carriers.
You really only have a choice of a couple providers, so how much incentive do they have to lower prices? Is that what you're saying, Mike?
I mean, exactly. And if they can see the prices that each other are charging, fine. I mean, they can, you know, knock, you know, $20 or $100, you know, a year or whatever off. But why would one of them, you know, just cut their price in half or actually really kind of harm their profits? I mean, the premiums keep going up and up and their profits keep going up and up.
You know, but Mike, this is a great question. Yeah. Lisa Girton, what do you think? You're with Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there are a couple of questions within that comment or even a couple of observations within that comment. And one is, without a doubt, the ACA does help solve the challenge of access to insurance for more Americans, and that's a really good thing. I think there are questions about whether it in and of itself is going to make a difference on the affordability. And
do you agree with our caller there?
Yes, I do.
I think you've got some more things to say. We've got a short break coming up. So, Lisa,
okay.
I'll let you finish up after that break. And, Mike, hang on. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. After a quick break, we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning, and more on health exchanges for New Hampshire coming up on The Exchange. Then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, it's the pros and cons of renting in today's economy. Dina Temple-Raston, NPR's counterterrorism correspondent, is in New Hampshire this week. She's the featured speaker Wednesday night for our new Justice and Journalism series. And she'll join Laura Kanoy on The Exchange Thursday morning to discuss her recent assignment in Pakistan. Tune in Thursday at 9 a.m. on NHPR and NHPR.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Bernstein Shure, committed to practical, innovative, and entrepreneurial legal solutions for clients in New Hampshire and around the world in Manchester and at BernsteinShure.com. And from the New Hampshire Division of Economic Development, helping Granite State businesses grow and prosper, online at NHEconomy.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, how New Hampshire will handle its health care exchange mandated by the Affordable Care Act. We invite your questions or comments. What questions do you have about how these health exchanges are supposed to operate and whether they might help you or your business obtain better health coverage? You can call us at 1-800-892-6477, send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on the exchange page at nhpr.org or on our Facebook page. By the way, you'll find a link there and on our website to a report exploring the impacts of the different health exchange plans on New Hampshire. And Lisa Girton, just before the break, we had a caller, Mike in Hanover, who said he thought that setting up an exchange would increase access to health care in New Hampshire, but he was skeptical about the costs and whether they would be reduced, and you were jumping in on that. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, I was observing that I think Mike is right in that the accessibility piece is pretty clear, and that's great news. And in the affordability, I think there are questions about how much this will really help. In fact, there are some new costs. Expanding that access, of course, comes with a price tag, and new taxes that will be passed along to consumers as part of their insurance premium are what's helping fund that access. So the affordability question is a real one. I think the rest of his observation is complex. And I always say that when it comes to healthcare economics, you can take everything you learned in college and throw it out the window. because while he's right, competition is generally a good thing, and generally, price transparency, competition, all of those things do help, generally speaking, keep things affordable. In health insurance, with the cost of premium being so tightly tied to the underlying cost of health care, it's not quite the simple equation that it usually is. So will having new options be part of what helps keeps this affordable? I think it will. But does it directly get at that underlying cost of health care? It does not.
Wow. Well, and, Todd mentioned before, it's sort of like trying to buy a ticket online from, Manchester to Miami. And yet you do notice, Lisa Kaplan-Howe, that when you shop for airline tickets, it's often every single airline, oh my gosh, is charging $499. So even though there is total transparency, it doesn't seem to affect the cost very much.
I think health insurance is a little different because there are different benefits within, an airline ticket for the most part is an airline ticket. And so while we certainly need to look at the cost of it, I think consumers will also have a new way and a new tool for looking at the value that's provided and the benefits. And that's certainly an important part of the cost as well. When I think about what tools are in the toolbox of the exchange to impact affordability, I think there are a few. First of all, we will have more competition in New Hampshire because every exchange, including New Hampshire's, will have two multi-state plans that aren't currently in the state and will be coming into the state through the exchange.
Now, hang on, Lisa. What does that mean? Two multi-state plans?
So it will be national plans that will be sold on the exchange. One needs to be offered by a nonprofit insurer. So these are insurers that likely aren't currently in the state but will be coming into the state as part of the exchange. But the other thing that we'll see is that consumers for the first time, truly because they have more information about the plans, can make probably, at least those who previously were shopping on their own, a more thoughtful decision about how the benefits align and not just base it on name recognition or other things like that. So I think that will drive insurers, hopefully, to compete more on value. But certainly there are other potential tools in the toolbox of the exchange, and part of it depends on how the exchange is designed and structured. And we hope that it's designed and structured in a way that really will start to get at that affordability, knowing that there are other tools that need to come down the road.
All right. Well, Mike, excellent question. Thank you for joining us. Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And a couple emails have just come in with some questions relevant to what you just said, Lisa Kaplan-Howe. Here's one from John who says, will individuals be able to shop across state lines with the health exchange, or will we have to shop within New Hampshire? Also, what role will the insurance department play in weeding out fly-by-night insurance companies that are undercapitalized? John, I want to let you know we're going to have the insurance commissioner on the program in a couple minutes, so I'll ask him that. But Ray White, to you, will individuals be able to shop across state lines, or will we just have to shop within New Hampshire? Lisa addressed that too, but I'd like to hear from you.
Well, the question about across state lines actually came up in the legislature last session. There was a bill to permit insurers to avoid the regulatory mandates of the state of New Hampshire and offer their plans here. That bill ultimately failed really for two reasons. One, there was a concern that these plans that didn't have a mandate attached to them would be in an unfair price situation against the carriers that are already presently here. And secondly, there was philosophical differences about the whole regulatory scheme. So I think that's yet to be sorted out, what plans will be qualified for the exchange and even who will be able to make the decisions of what plans are available on the exchange. And believe me, that's a question that's been asked often to the commissioner, HHS Commissioner Sebelius. So I think there's yet to be some more guidance about that whole issue.
Wow, and yet to be sorted out, as you said, Ray White, and yet Todd Bookman, from what you and I have talked about, time's running out. I mean, clock's ticking on this thing.
We've got to move fairly quickly here. A decision will actually likely be made this week, many people expect, by the Commissioners of Insurance and Health and Human Services here in New Hampshire to figure out where we want to go. The reason being that we've got to get a plan in front of a group of lawmakers, the Joint Healthcare Reform Oversight Committee. They've got to approve a choice, and then the governor will have to sign off. The state has to submit a fairly thorough blueprint 1 month from today, February 15th. So there needs to be action taken fairly quickly to decide exactly how New Hampshire is going to navigate its exchange. It's simple to say we're just going to set up the exchange. There's lots of options within what an exchange will look like that the state still needs to sort out. And that's what this this task force that representatives here today are from has been looking at. How do we want to regulate those plans that are going to be sold in New Hampshire? How are we going to handle things called navigators? Navigators are basically, if we think of health insurance exchanges like Travelocity or Orbitz, the navigators are almost like old school travel agents. They're the people in the community that are going to help folks make that decision. So if you don't have access to the internet or if you're disabled, there's a large group of people that are not going to be able to just shop for these plans online. The navigators are thought of as this group that's going to help people make this choice. But there's a lot of options that need to be hammered out about how these navigators are going to function.
And who are they? Do they work for the state? Are they nonprofits?
Right. And that's going to be decided through this blueprint, what this looks like. And I think people here have different visions of what the navigator role should be.
Real quick, back to Ray White and then to our callers.
Just to Todd's point, I'd say it's important to note that New Hampshire's present position on January 15th right now is that we have no role. It's going to take an affirmative action by the state of New Hampshire to even get in the game because right now we're completely ceded everything to the federal government at this point.
That has to do with that debate in the legislature that we talked about last year or the year before. All right, let's take another call, and this is Steve in Amherst. Hi, Steve. You're on the exchange. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, good. Todd was just beginning to get at my question. The New Hampshire must notify the federal government if it wants to partnership in an area called consumer assistance. If New Hampshire says, yes, we want to partnership with the federal government in that area, there is money available for New Hampshire to go with consumer assistance and navigator and rollout and the marketing of the exchange, which, as you can tell, is very complex. So how do we notify the residents and small businesses of this complexity? If New Hampshire is going to take part in that, it needs to tell the government, yes, we are going to partnership with you. The advisory board, all but one, said we want to go that way. And I was wondering if your guests can elaborate on whether they think by November 15th, New Hampshire is going to say, yes, we are going to participate in the consumer assistance rollout piece and take advantage of the money that's there.
Okay, Steve, thanks a lot for calling. Lisa Kaplan Howe, please.
And those are the discussions that are happening right now. As the caller mentioned, the Health Exchange Advisory Board met on Friday about that. Our understanding, as Todd said, is that the commissioners of Health and Human Service and Insurance are talking about it right now. And then we expect shortly thereafter the Legislative Joint Health Reform Oversight Committee to meet about it, and then the governor to also weigh in on it. You know, from my perspective, it's a really important opportunity that the state should really strongly consider taking advantage of. As the caller mentioned, money will come to the state in order to do this. But as he said, this is a really complex topic, and we need all hands on deck to help people out, and to particularly in the first year, get people into the system. Because as Todd said, there are a lot of potential people coming in. Hopefully after year one or two, people will be in and it will be easier to navigate. But getting them in is going to be a big task. And there's a role for health insurance producers in that. There's a role for health insurance companies in that. Certainly a role for state workers. But I think making sure that the information gets to people where they are and people that they are comfortable in working with and trust is really important. So engaging other local entities, including community-based organizations, and that work will be incredibly important to make sure that people get in when they need to.
Well, and that they understand it, right, Lisa? Because,
absolutely.
I mean, as anybody who's gone through their own plan at work, for example, it's confusing. You need somebody to help you wade through it.
Yeah, it's very confusing. And Todd mentioned some of the populations that might need more help. I mean, think about people with complex medical needs and needing to understand, is this plan better for me or is this plan? And that's not easy to do. I think we all saw with Medicare Part D, the prescription drug plan, the significant assistance that people needed. And that was just on prescription drugs.
And just for one population of
folks. Exactly.
Well, joining us now on the phone is Roger Savini. And as we said earlier, he's New Hampshire's insurance commissioner. And Commissioner Savini, good to have you. Thanks for giving us your time this morning.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you very much.
How much are you feeling the pressure, Commissioner Savini, to get this exchange up and running? I mean, as Todd Bookman described, clock's ticking here.
You know, you're absolutely right. The clock is ticking. And our urge to the legislature is that they convene this oversight committee so that we can go before them and get direction. There really isn't much of anything we can do until the legislature gives us the direction they want us to go in.
So what are you waiting for exactly, Commissioner Savini, then?
We're waiting for the oversight committee, the finalization of the reconstitution of the oversight committee, and for the oversight committee to set up its first meeting.
What does this mean for you at the insurance department, Commissioner Savini? Once this is all sort of said and done and the feds have approved it and it comes back to the state, then you kind of have to kick into high gear, right?
Well, assuming the oversight committee gives us the approval to go ahead and enter into a partnership with the federal government, yes, it does. It's then up to us to take advantage of the grants that are available, to put together RFPs to finalize RFPs, to hire those that are going to do the work that the grants contemplate, and essentially to get things moving. You're right.
Yeah. Well, are there models for you, Commissioner Savini, in terms of other states or other private organizations for you to look towards as you start to work on this?
Well, there are two features to the grant that we're talking about here, or two grants, two partnership grants. The first one has to do with plan management. And essentially, the model that we would use there is exactly the model that we're using currently in doing our rate and form review. It's just that the initial setup and the initial reviews we would need some assistance with. The second is the consumer assistance partnership, and that we really don't have any models to follow. We would have to working with interested parties develop the model.
So we're not quite sure yet how that's going to look, although, gosh, between 17 and 20 states are kind of well on their way on this. So there may be models for you to look to there in terms of what other states are doing.
There certainly well could be.
I got a question in an email earlier, Commissioner Savini, from John, who wanted to know what role would the insurance department play in weeding out fly-by-night insurance companies that are undercapitalized. This came up as we were talking about how some out-of-state coverage might be available under these exchanges. Can you answer John's question at this point in time, Commissioner Savini?
Yes, I can, Laura. The answer is fairly simple. The state of New Hampshire would continue to be responsible to make sure that those companies doing business in New Hampshire are licensed by the state of New Hampshire. So we would, you know, I mean, they would have to go through the due diligence from a financial standpoint to make sure we felt that they were financially sound and able to do business in the state. Now, as far as the regulating of companies that do business here, and the plans that they're going to offer, there are some distinctions between the plan management and whether it is a partnership or whether it's a strictly federally facilitated exchange. If it's a partnership, then the state enters into an MOU with the federal government.
Memorandum of Understanding.
Right. Which essentially, in our view, is better for consumers in the state because it gives the state some say into what goes into the regulation of the plan management.
All right. Well, Commissioner Savini, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Roger Savini again, New Hampshire's insurance commissioner. We're taking your questions and comments this morning at 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at this concept of health exchanges coming under the Affordable Care Act. As we've heard, these are described as marketplaces where consumers and small businesses can shop around for health coverage. We're looking at who might be able to participate in these exchanges, both from the consumer point of view and from the insurance company point of view. And we want your questions at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Ray White, just coming out of our talk with Commissioner Savini there, I do have to ask you, because he raised it, this idea of a partnership exchange versus a federally controlled exchange. Now, this is kind of getting into the weeds here, but can you just tell us what that is and why it's important?
Well, very briefly, if we go back a year ago, there were really three options in front of us. There was a federal exchange, partnership exchange was sort of halfway in between, and a state-based exchange. House Bill 1297 that was passed last session said the state of New Hampshire cannot have a state-based exchange. So without repealing that law, we actually in the state have a prohibition against a state-based exchange. So now we're down to two choices, default into the federal exchange or perhaps this partnership. Your phone caller referenced one person on the board that didn't feel real good about the consumer assistance partnership, and that was me. I do favor the plan management partnership. So to be clear, I do favor a partnership, but I don't favor, I'll call it partnership light versus partnership heavy. I favor partnership light, which
is... What does partnership light mean? Yeah.
I think it preserves the regulatory role of the Department of Insurance to regulate plans, solvency, the things that the commissioner just talked about. And on the HHS side, it preserves the role of our Department of Health and Human Services to make eligibility determinations and, again, to continue the things that they do. My feeling all along, even when I was a senator and proposed legislation, was let's not disrupt all the systems that are in place now. Let's try to enter into this with the least disruption to the present marketplace and really only serve the 15% or so of the population that isn't being served well. It's not in the system, not insured, whatever. Let's not displace everything that's working. And so that's why I favor the plan management partnership approach over the consumer assistance approach, which I feel has the ability or at least the possibility of displacing systems that already are in place and work now.
I see. And Lisa Girton, how do you feel about this?
Well, if I might, I just I can imagine to callers just getting used to these terms. This must be overwhelming.
Right, partnership exchange and so forth.
Jennifer Patterson at the insurance department used a really simple analogy that to me helped put it in perspective. So I think I'll start with that because the exchange itself, as she said, is like the box. It's the portal. It's the technology. And as Senator White pointed out, we are at the point now where we know we're not building that. But the plan management partnership is basically the state taking control of what's in that box, what's for sale, what products will be there, how will it work, and consumer assistance is how will people find out about the box, how will they make their choices among what's in it. Those are the options before us, and we can elect to do either or both of those functions at the state level.
All right, great. More after a short break of your phone calls and emails, so join us at 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and Vineyard Brands, importers of War Sports of Portugal, including Warrior and Otima 10-year-old Tawny Port, on the web at vineyardbrands.com. And Living Innovations, with fulfilling job opportunities for those interested in helping seniors and people with disabilities at home and in the community, online at livinginnovations.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, new research on the nation's skyrocketing crime rate between the 60s and 80s pinpoints a potential culprit, leaded gasoline. We hear some convincing correlations between lead levels and crime, including the statistical drop as lead was phased out of the fuel supply. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth gets the lead out today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, how New Hampshire might handle its health care exchange mandated by the Affordable Care Act. Join us with your questions or comments. What do you want to know about how these health exchanges set up in each state are supposed to operate and whether they might help you or your company get better health coverage. The number for your questions is 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. Here's an email, all of you, that came in from Stephanie, who says, how will the New Hampshire Healthcare Exchange impact reimbursement and compensation rates for physicians? How will it impact patient access to specialists? Do New Hampshire physicians have the capacity to absorb the anticipated influx of new patients? Boy, Todd Bookman, on that last point that Stephanie makes, do New Hampshire physicians have the capacity to absorb the influx of new patients? That's a big question worth looking at even outside of this whole conversation about exchanges.
That is a good question. I think what's interesting is that the hospitals have been sort of very sort of vocal supporters of the Affordable Care Act and this expansion, including the Medicaid expansion. Interestingly, a report came out at the end of last week that said that they may not profit as much doing the expansion. But I think most people would agree that if the need is there, the doctors will be there too, that the system will figure out a way to provide access for all these people. One interesting thing that we saw in Massachusetts, which was very much a laboratory for exchanges and for this new model.
Have an exchange there.
They have an exchange, the MassHealth Connector. They have extremely high coverage rates. Somewhere north of 95% of people in the Bay State have health insurance. They also happen to have the highest premiums in the land. So there you see that access doesn't necessarily equal affordability. But I think there you see that people now with health coverage, they go to the doctor. Many of whom didn't have health insurance before the law was rolled out now have access to primary care, and primary care can lead to specialization if those services are required.
And to you, Lisa Kaplan Howe, I think to Stephanie's first point, how will the healthcare exchange impact reimbursement and compensation rates for physicians? I know this is tricky. We don't know because we don't know entirely, as Lisa Gerton said earlier, what's in that box. Correct me if I'm wrong, though, Lisa. I have read that there are four different levels of coverage in these exchanges, like bronze, silver, gold, and
platinum.
Platinum. That's what I thought. So that may determine reimbursement rates, specialist coverage, and so forth.
That really determines within a plan and the benefits that are covered how much a consumer might have to pay
right.
versus
what you get
how
and what
much
you don't.
The health plan pays. So how much cost sharing there is, whether it be copay or deductible. The exchange itself doesn't directly impact how much a health plan might pay a physician or another healthcare provider for a service. But certainly the higher cost sharing people have, the harder it is for them to actually afford that care. And getting back to one thing that Todd said and that Stephanie raised in her question, just because people don't have health insurance doesn't mean they're not getting any health care right now. They may not be getting the best health care, not as far as quality, but best health care in the right place or the most efficient health care. Many of them are going to the emergency room for things that they should have earlier gone to a primary care physician if only they had that access. But as far as whether we'll be able to, as our health care system, be able to serve all the new people in the system, I think it's important to think about them going into different parts of the system in a more efficient way. But it doesn't mean they're out of the system altogether now. It just means that they're going to the less efficient places and they're probably not able to pay for the care, and the cost of that gets shifted across the system.
Right, that squeezing of the balloon at one end, and it comes out in the ERs often. Lisa, and then Ray White, and then back to our listeners.
Sure. Well, I think that it is true. A lot of these people are in the system today. They are the uncompensated care. They are the charity care. We've done a lot of research on this as a company, and we believe that certainly in the first phase of the exchange, most of the people in there will have been previously uninsured and using a subsidy, which means by definition they are between 1 and 4 times federal poverty levels. So affordability is going to be extremely important for these people, even with a subsidy. And so as we're out talking to the hospitals, we say, you know, nobody gets to sit on the sideline here. We need, now that, you know, you're going to be getting some reimbursement for people that were previously showing up at your door uninsured, what's a reasonable level of reimbursement for that? And, you know, we hope to have those dialogues with the hospitals, because if we don't, it is going to be theoretically an unaffordable product for these people. And that would defeat the whole purpose of,
right,
of what we're trying to accomplish.
Stephanie, thanks for that question. Ray White, did you want to jump in?
I just wanted to make the point that I've always had a concern about affordability. Both Mike, your first caller, and now Stephanie have both brought up a frustration that I think a lot of us have, that The Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, I think, did a lot for patient protection, but has done little to none for affordable care. The things we're talking about today really have nothing to do with the provider side, and that's really where the cost of the care is, and I think, quite frankly, we're not addressing it with the things we're discussing today.
Well, Stephanie, thank you very much for the email. And back to our callers. Carol's waiting in Grantham. Hi, Carol. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm a former federal employee, and during the time that I was working for the government, once a year we would have the opportunity to look at a full range of health care plans that were available to us, and it was geographically determined. You know, where you lived and worked was part of the scheme. So are the new exchanges going to be rather like that?
Where you sort of look at it and see who's in the game and who isn't and what they're offering. Lisa Kaplan-Howe?
Yeah, I think it will, both for people shopping on their own for insurance, but also for people shopping through small employers for insurance. So there will be a range of plans available to you, as you mentioned earlier, Laura, laid out in different kind of levels or tiers of whether a benefit or whether a package covers more or less as far as the cost of coverage and how much cost sharing there is. But that, you know, for individuals, they can choose across the range of those plans. Many of them will have a subsidy. And for employees, they will at least be able to choose within one of those tiers. And for small employees, that's something, small business employees, that's something that this just can't happen today.
Well, and Carol, thanks for the question. And it raises another question that I had. I think for you, Lisa Girton, so we talked earlier about the different types of plans, you know, bronze or gold or platinum or whatever. Are there basic rules, though, Lisa, that all participants in these exchanges have to play by? And by participants, I mean the companies who are offering insurance products over the exchange. Do they all have to provide some sort of bare minimum, play by certain rules?
Yes, that would be the essential health benefit definition, which the law itself included categories of care that had to be covered. And then each state had to determine what their benchmark would be to say, okay, well, this is what's for sale in the market today, and we want to make sure that what's for sale out there is comparable. So that kind of defines what the scope of coverage is, what's covered, what's included. And then, as Lisa Kaplan-Howe said, this idea of having four metal levels says, okay, if you want to buy the richest plan, which would be the platinum plan, then you're going to pay less premium. I'm sorry, you're going to pay more premium, but at the time you get the care, you'll have less out-of-pocket expense. Another consumer might say, you know, I'd rather pay less premium knowing that when I go to get care, I'm going to have more responsibility for that out-of-pocket piece. So all of those things are defined, and I think that does contribute to the ability to compare and contrast your options and figure out what the best value might be.
And if your state benchmark, maybe Ray White or Todd Bookman, if your state benchmark is too generous, for lack of a better word, is it possible, Ray, that, you know, insurers will choose not to participate? They'll just say, you know, this is not, this doesn't make sense for me.
That won't happen in New Hampshire because we've always had kind of a rich baseline anyway.
I see.
In fact, one of my concerns is in an awkward way, and it's kind of complicated to explain, but in an awkward way, I felt New Hampshire was penalized because we had such a rich baseline. There are other states where their level of care in their basic plans is much lower than ours, and they had more flexibility than we did. Because we, again, always had a very rich baseline, a lot of mandates in our state. There's many components of the Affordable Care Act that New Hampshire has had for years. And quite frankly, the sticker shock to us is going to be a lot less than it's going to be in some states where they're going to have to implement some standards that we've had for years that they've never had, and it's going to be quite a steep curve for them.
Let's take another call. This is Annette in Concord. Hi, Annette. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One of your guests mentioned access does not equal affordability, and that's exactly what my husband and I are facing. We've worked in the state for over 25 years. Small companies, company of one, I'm a consultant. This year we're finding our best quote is for a family of four, and we're all healthy, is $32,000 a month for the four of us, because we have to buy individually because the state does not allow associations to form groups, and it companies of one That's the best quote we can get.
Wait, Annette, $32,000 a month or $3,200 a month?
$3,200.
Okay, still expensive.
$38,000 a year.
Sure.
$38,000 a year. We're actually saying we have to leave the state. We have to go someplace we can find, you know, and work and have insurance. And, you know, and we're just in shock that we're facing this.
Wow.
You know, we can afford it at that rate. And as I said, we are healthy people. It's just because we're companies of one.
Yeah, and Annette, I've heard this from friends who also are entrepreneurs and have their own companies. Todd, isn't this part of what the exchanges are all about, though? Allowing people like Annette and super small businesses to shop around and maybe not have to pay so much.
It will allow Annette to find more options, hopefully more easily. She'll be able to compare what her and her family will receive in terms of benefits. I think a lot of people agree that this is not going to dramatically lower costs. Costs specifically in New England are quite high. It's just the nature of living here. You know, what's really driving healthcare costs is not what's happening between, you know, you and your insurer. It's what happens. Medical waste at hospitals. It's too many tests. Expensive prescription drugs. It's the great technology in the medical system that is good. It keeps us alive. It keeps us healthy. But it has a high cost, and I think Lisa Girton could speak to that, what she sees at Anthem. I mean, this is an expensive part of our lives, and it's not something that we are necessarily going to get away from anytime soon.
Wow, yeah, and we've done multiple shows on just what's driving these costs. I wonder, Lisa Girton, do you want to jump in on Annette's point? And Annette, I've heard this from other, you know, one-shop businesses like yours.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that we're a bit worried about for individual purchasers today, in New Hampshire today, there is medical underwriting, which means healthier people that go to the individual market to buy a policy get the benefit of that good health status. That goes away under the Affordable Care Act. So we've sort of homogenized those costs. Community rating means that the healthy and the sick and that individual market sort of bear the costs together. The concern is that if you have been benefiting from being healthy and your premium is lower, once the 2014 changes kick in, you may see a big price bump that even with the penalty may cause you to say, I can't afford to buy this anymore. That could be a problem that we're facing down the road, and I think we're hoping that that won't be a huge problem. But it is of concern.
Lisa Kaplan-Howe, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that that Todd is right, that it's not just health insurance that contributes to costs. It's certainly there's the underlying cost of health care. Today we're focused on the exchange. There are certainly other tools in the Affordable Care Act to try to get to that. Many of them are pilot projects, so it will take further work down the road to make those into broader and longer-term tools. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, though, is that getting back to a point that a number of us were talking about earlier, we are all now absorbing the cost of people being in the system uncovered, not being able to pay for their health care, and those costs don't disappear. They don't just get absorbed. They get, you know, moved across the system. And those of us with insurance, the estimates are that we pay an extra $1,000 per year just for that. So certainly there's not one silver bullet. Hopefully the exchange is part of the solution. Certainly getting more people into coverage is part of the solution. But there are other tools there and other tools that need to be developed and broadened down the road to really get at the cost control issue.
But the hope is that if more folks are covered either through the exchange or through Medicaid expansion, which we haven't talked about yet. That's
right.
Another program for another day, Lisa. The hope is that that will help bring down the costs for all of us a little bit because you won't have this uncompensated care burden on the overall system.
And I think we have to be careful not to talk about necessarily bringing down the costs, but really getting at the level of increase in the cost every year. Because right now it's a really steep level. A few years ago before the Affordable Care Act, we were talking 3 to 4 times the increase in the consumer price index every year. So we're not talking about necessarily turning that curve around, but really leveling that curve out.
Let's take one more call if we could. This is Reeve in Wolfboro. Hi, Reeve. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I have two quick questions. One is, can I search this? I want to be able to search the site anonymously. I don't want it collecting information on me while I'm comparing the different companies. The second and very much more important point to me is I had insurance and dropped it many years ago because information about medicine is bifurcated. It is information which is approved by the AMA and written about in medical journals and approved by pharma. And there is a massive amount of information which doesn't fall into that category, less expensive solutions. And because they're less expensive, there's no money to study them. There will not, for decades and decades and decades, be sufficient information on them for them to be able to meet double-blind studies and so forth. But they're very valuable.
You're talking about alternative medicine and so forth.
Exactly. I dropped insurance years ago because it was completely pointless to me to go to normal physicians who are trapped in the information on one side of the river. And without a good example is cholesterol. Cholesterol is desperately important for the body. Dozens of physicians have written books about this. The AMA.
And Reeve, I'm just going to jump in, and I do apologize, but we're heading towards the end of our hour, and I want to get to your first question. Personal information. She's shopping around for coverage. Maybe she doesn't want to put in that she's had a particular health problem. She feels like she might be discriminated against, like an employer might pick up that information. Todd, what do you think? Reeve, it's a great question and one that I had not thought of.
Well, to shop and purchase insurance through the exchange, what we're going to see are people creating member logins. I mean, that it's going to require some information. Now, I'm not sure on the specifics. If you can just generally shop without entering any information, that may be a feature. But when it comes down to actually clicking pay and buying yourself health insurance, it is going to require exchanging information through this network.
All right. Well, all of you, thank you very much for coming in. Lots more to follow up on, including a couple topics that we touched on today. Todd, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Laura.
Todd Bookman, health reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. And Lisa Girton, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Lisa Girton, co-chair of the New Hampshire Health Exchange Advisory Board, president and general manager of Anthem, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield. Ray White, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Ray White, president of Cornerstone Benefits and Retirement Group, also a member of the advisory board. And Lisa Kaplan-Howe, thank you also for your time.
Thank you.
Lisa Kaplan-Howe, policy director for New Hampshire Voices for Health and a member also of the Health Exchange Advisory Board. Again, you can go to our Facebook page or the exchange page at nhpr.org to find a link to a report exploring the impacts of the different health exchange plans on New Hampshire. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.